Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast, another position seasonal preview. Tonight, Bud going to take a look at the secondary. In every defensive unit that we've talked about so far, I have tried to find a way to work Derwin James into the conversation, and tonight's look at will be very much based around Derwin James and what exactly he means to this unit. It's a unit that we would be incredibly excited about. I think we'd be optimistic about what you could possibly put out on the field, even if Derwin James wasn't on campus. But guess what, Bud? He is. He's returning after 91 tackles, and he's very much poised to be one of the breakout players in all of college football this year.
Yeah, he is. He's ridiculous, man. Like, Derwin, we talked about this in Slack chat today for Tomahawk, which is where we discuss all our editorial stuff, right? Derwin James is just so good. And look, already Jimbo has had the best quarterback in Florida State history, in my opinion, and I think most people's opinion, in Jameis Winston. He has the best running back in Florida State history, as we've already discussed, in Dalvin Cook. There's a very real chance he's had, that he's currently on campus right now, that he has the guy who is going to go down, if he stays healthy, as the best safety in Florida State history. And they've had some damn good ones, right? Maybe not like a Dion-level player that they've had at safety, but
Ingram, they've had a lot of first-round picks, yeah. a lot of high first-round picks. And, I mean, people don't associate this name because of how old it was again, but Leroy Butler is one of the better secondary people to play the game. That is not somebody that you would easily be able to overtake.
Oh, absolutely. And yet, standing here today, I think Derwin James can do it if he stays on his course.
I think Derwin James, I mean, this is the challenge here. I think Derwin James can be one of the best defensive players in the history of the program. At the same time, you don't want to lose yourself with all this hyperbole. And this is the most dangerous time of this part of the college football season, the late June, July, early part of August, where you get like this machine built up where, oh, this guy in your head is never going to blow an assignment. He's never going to miss a tackle. Thinking of these players, particularly one or two guys on each unit, and what you have in your mind for them at times becomes just unrealistic. Obviously, Derwin James is not a robot. There'll be times where he takes a bad angle, etc. Having said that, he's one of the most unique talents I've ever seen play college football, and there's no reason to think that if he's healthy, if he stays healthy, with the incredible physical gifts that he has and a continued trait of all those incredible players that you talked about, I would also add to the list Telvin Smith, LaMarcus Joyner, all these insanely transcendent talents have also been paired with a ridiculous work ethic, and James has the same thing as well. So I want us to be incredibly optimistic, and want us to appreciate what we have in front of us, because it really is a incredibly special talent, and I think it's going to be one of the larger storylines of the season, and really college football as a whole.
I 100% agree, Ingram. I pulled up something from last summer, July 22nd, 2015, Derwin James Instagram, my second home. The 400 Club. He's repping 405 before his freshman year. And the reason why I'm caught up in the Derwin James hype is because I saw it firsthand, covering him for 3 years as a recruit. People talk about how much Michael Jordan hated to lose and how competitive he was, and how he would just, like, he would, you know, play ping pong until his arm fell off, right? Or the legendary gambling debts that he rung up on planes after games because he just refused to quit and would, even if he was on a serious cold streak, would just keep going. Derwin James hates to lose, like, to that level. Like, when his 7-on team lost, he would just be devastated. Like, some of his guys, you know, they walk off the field, whatever. He hates to lose, and he puts in the work to make sure that it doesn't happen. Like, when your best players are your best workers, that's when you know you got something. I mean, 6'3", 213, Florida State lists him as 211, that's nuts for a safety entering a sophomore year with that freakish level of athleticism and that freakish level of strength. I mean, just every hit that he delivers seems like the guy is just being knocked down forcefully. It's nuts. I have never seen this from a freshman safety. I don't think Jamal Adams did this at LSU as a true freshman. I don't think Quinn Blanding did this at Virginia as a true freshman. Hell, I don't think Sean Taylor as a true freshman was doing this for Miami, was he? Now, I'm not saying James is perfect. I think he does have to continue to get better in coverage. That's the reason why he didn't play so much in the first couple games last year. He started the final eight games. Through the first five, he was used some, but not used so much until he showed he had enough understanding of the defense to really come on and play within himself. 71 tackles, despite starting only like 70% of the year. 9.5 tackles for loss, 4.5 sacks, 4 pass breakups, 2 forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery. As a freshman safety? A safety? Who they used as a defensive end, a linebacker, and both safety positions? Man, we're watching a guy who, if he continues to... Because of his starting point was so great, if he progresses like a normal college player, like, gets decent jump freshman to sophomore year, decent jump sophomore to junior year, there won't be a senior year. He'll be gone. Then you're going to be... If that happens, you're going to be witnessing one of the great players in Florida State history because his starting point is so damn high. If he improves off that, good night. Their ability to move him around, man, I think has a chance to make this secondary even better than it was last year. And last year's secondary had the number 5 pick in the draft, Jalen Ramsey.
You're right. What you get in James and how much flexibility he provides you, in a way, he's almost like a force multiplier or something like that. I mean, he has the potential to make everybody else around him better simply because you have to pay attention to him. You have to account for him. You have to allocate resources to him that you would never otherwise do that it's incredibly unlikely and rare that you have to account for a guy who plays that position. For instance, coming off of a blitz with somewhat routine, or just being matched up on a guy who theoretically you would think would be able to block him. And I'm not just making a joke about the right tackle. We've got a hell of a lot of mileage out of that clip, but schematically, you would think a tight end would more than be able to handle a free safety and turn that into an advantage for you. You'd be able to pick him up relatively easy if you're asking for pass protection. He's just a guy who doesn't fit the general rules of football, and it's somebody that you have to put way more attention to than you would ever suspect for a guy of that frame and a guy who plays that position.
A true sophomore. And you're already having to do this to him at a position that's not always easy for young guys to star at because there is a lot of responsibility in playing safety. This year, I think his role back there increases. He's going to be playing next to either most likely Trey Marshall, Nate Andrews, or A.J. Westbrook in some combination. But Durbin's a guy that's like almost, as long as he stays healthy, knock on wood, he's never going to leave the field. He just may play a bunch of different roles for you. At safety, I think he can be a phenomenal safety. I think that he had a couple interception opportunities last year. It just came up short on him. I'm sure he'll catch a couple more of those. He already had 4 pass breakups. I think that number will increase as well. But, man, I the sky's the limit for him, and it just makes this secondary so special. I don't know what the hell Phil Steele was thinking rating them 21st. Did you catch that today?
Saw that. I was a little surprised. He's on the good normally shit, pretty good at his position ratings, and that's certainly an outlier.
Yeah, that was... I was curious. I looked at it. I was like, you know what? There's maybe like 4 or 5 secondaries listed above Florida State who would not trade for FSU's. Everybody else would be like, yeah, we'll swap like today, right now, if you don't mind, before you come to your senses. There's a couple areas where he could improve. I think in terms of recognizing route combinations when Florida State plays its match defense, when they're playing pattern match and zone, I think that's something he could certainly improve in. I think he can improve in terms of making sure that other players know where they need to be lined up. But yet, there's not that many super young guys around him. He's still one of the younger guys in this defense. You know, Marquez White is a senior. Trey Marshall's a junior. Nate Andrews is a senior. You know, McFadden and Lewis are both sophomores, as is Westbrook. There's really the only guy that's younger than him who's actually going to get any burn in this defense is probably Levante Taylor. So it's important for your safeties to kind of be your field generals on defense, but it's not like the responsibility is going to fall solely on him. And then I think he also can maybe take some better angles to break up some passes. Sometimes he's so confident in his abilities that I think he tries to undercut a route a little bit too sharply. But those are really slight criticisms, man, and stuff that a lot of times juniors and seniors struggle with. So the sky's the limit for Derwin James. I'm really excited to watch two more years of him, and I pray he stays healthy because he's a great kid to watch and a kid I've always enjoyed covering.
Yep, a guy that you're just excited to have in your program and a guy that we'll be able to watch for two more years. Bud, talked about James. I think we were pretty fair in our optimism. Go ahead and switch over to a senior, a guy that was incredibly reliable last year, had a better season than I think we would have projected or anticipated, and a native of the state of Alabama who returns for his senior year and may be in a place to really have a breakout year and earn himself some significant money.
Absolutely. Marquez White. And Marquez tweeted a really interesting stat here recently, and I'm not sure where he got it from, but maybe he was retweeting it. Some account, I think it's the NFL's college football account, wasn't giving him enough love. So on July 11th, he tweeted at the NFL's college football account, 34% completion percentage allowed, gave up two catches over 10 yards out of 42 targets, and no touchdowns allowed. Put some respect on my name. So, look, I talked to some guys who played corner for Florida State and in the NFL, and they had two things to say about Marquez White. Number one, he's a very good corner. He's got the length at over 6 foot tall. He's got the leaping ability as a former basketball player. He's got the athleticism. He changes direction pretty well. The other part of that now, we'll be fair to say, he does play the field side. And when you play field, that's a little bit tougher for quarterbacks, especially ones that don't have great arms, to complete the ball against in college football. That's oftentimes the side you have safety help too. And so that's a longer throw. It's a more difficult throw. That's why a lot of times teams would still try to go at Jalen Ramsey, even though Ramsey was the better player than White was. But I certainly think White is a future NFL player. I think the decision to give up basketball 2 years ago was a really good one. He only came down with one interception. As we know, interceptions are not quite as much about luck as fumbles are, but there still is a luck component in interceptions, and White may not have had the best interception luck last year. You got to figure a few more balls will go his way. The things I think he needs to improve on, probably press technique at times when they ask him to, and also he needs to improve in tackling. You know, he's not quite the tackler that Ramsey was, but I think he's still good in that. He's certainly one of the more underrated players on this team, and I think for the casual fan, especially the casual college football fan, when his name starts appearing on draft lists, they're going to be like, who? And then they're like, oh, wait a second, no, I knew about this guy the whole time. Yeah, he's really good. He never gives up any completions. He never really gets thrown on all that much. And they'll be full of it, but they'll be right at the same time. Like, everything they say about him will be right. They'll just be full of it because they really didn't know about him.
I think Marquez has put himself in a place to have a significant season, can be one of the one of the more recognizable figures on this defense, and the defense has a chance to be one of the better units in the country. So by all accounts, really good guy. Hope and wish nothing but the best for him, and will be a pretty significant player for how well, for that ability, if you want to believe that the defense has like this fifth and maybe even sixth gear, if the defense is going to be elite, I think Marquez White will be a big reason and a big part of it. But from there, let's move to
Oh, can I also mention that I think Marquez White is becoming more of a vocal leader on this defense just from talking to our guys at cover practice. White is definitely barking at guys more. I think he's, you know, last year, Jalen Ramsey was a very vocal leader, and not everybody always took to it because he was extremely harsh critic of some of his teammates, right? And he had the talent to back it up, but not everybody always reacts to that. I don't think White is quite as harsh as Ramsey was, but I do think he's assumed more of that leadership role. He also hosted that Moving Up Athletes Camp in his hometown in Dothan to give troubled youth or just youth that, you know, could be troubled more of a positive outlet in their life. And I think that was cool. And he brought a lot of teammates up there to help him out with that. He talked today to Seminoles.com, and he said, "Hey, I feel like I've got to come out and fight for my spot every day, so I'm not really complacent." And I thought that was a good example to set because Jimbo Fisher did say that every spot on the team is open, which granted, there's a 20-foot tall poster of Dalvin Cook behind him as he's saying this, so maybe not Dalvin Cook's spot, but it is important to compete for your job every day to set that example as a senior. And I think I think White is showing that he's seriously a good player, man.
It's a good point, and only more reason for optimism. But where do you want to go here?
Ingram, I think there's a number of different places we can go, but the important thing we just talked about is the positions that are locked down, right? We know Marquez White is going to start. We know Jerwin James is going to start. Can you name me another guy that you are absolutely certain is going to start on this defense?
No, I really can't. And I look at all of these guys. If you were to make me give you one name, I might bet on McFadden more than anybody else, but that even that is a pretty big gamble. So point well made. There are a ton of pieces here, and we don't really know what will constitute the two, three main other names that you'll see really kind of make up the first unit.
So let's save the McFadden White discussion for a minute. I'm going to go to the strong safety position opposite Derwin James and the star position. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Trey Marshall here. Trey Marshall.
Did they not let him in the weight room this summer, or what's going on there?
Yeah, he looks kind of small, doesn't he?
That is a guy who obviously hadn't done much over the summer at all. That's not excusable. And Vic, hats off to you in general. This is this one impressive crop. But yeah, Trey Marshall is he's gotten his time in.
Dude is yoked. I mean, it doesn't hurt to be related to Timmy Jernigan and have that gene pool, but good God. Trey Marshall looks absolutely huge, dude. And he was playing very well last year, let's not forget, before he tore his biceps, right? Biceps or triceps, whatever. He tore something in his arm and missed the rest of the year. And the defense really didn't play quite as well after that point at times in the secondary for a little bit. And then Derwin James came on and was like, "Oh, by the way, I'm Derwin James. I'm maybe the most talented defensive player on your team." Getting Trey Marshall back, though, I think is an underrated storyline about this defense this year that a lot in the kind of the national media and even in the ACC media are not noticing, but we're noticing because we follow this team really closely. Now, my intel from 7-on-7 and also from practice so far is that Marshall has been lining up both at star and opposite Derwin James at the strong safety position. At the strong safety, though, he's got to battle Nate Andrews, who's a very, experienced guy, has a lot of veteran savvy, not the most athletically gifted, but not a bad player, just a little more physically limited and really good in that role of the money player. But I think Trey Marshall is a guy, if you figure 70 snaps a game, 12-game schedule, you're probably have one game, two games to go over that. You're looking at 900 snaps. I think Trey Marshall is a legitimate 800-snap player on this defense, whether that's all at the safety opposite of White or opposite of James, whether that comes more in the star role or some combination of both. I don't know, and I'm not sure that it matters. And in fact, we talked about this in an episode several weeks ago where we said one of Charles Kelly's biggest challenges is going to be figuring out how the puzzle pieces all fit together in the secondary. Well, Trey Marshall is one of those puzzle pieces. He is a phenomenal athlete, especially with straight line speed. Maybe not the best in man coverage sometimes, but when he has the ability to patrol a zone and break on a ball, I think he really has that ability and has the ability to come up and hit and blitz off the edge. Another guy with big-time talent at 6 foot 209, that's excellent size as well. And the secondary has so many pieces, man. I mean, we're talking about a guy like Nate Andrews, who's a fourth-year guy, played on the national championship team as a true freshman, you know, played in 2014 in a role that was probably a little bit over his head, asking him to play safety that much, but they didn't really have a whole lot of other options at the time. Last year, he was hurt part of the time, but he played a little more of a limited role. I know Jimbo Fisher has spoken about him almost exclusively in using the term money, and I think Fisher sometimes picks his words very carefully. And when he describes Nate Andrews as a money player, he means that sixth defensive back that plays the role coverage responsibility-wise that would normally be played by the Mike linebacker. Money, Mike, Star, Sam, that's who they remove off the field. And yet on the defensive diagrams, they want the lettering to say the same. So the S, whether it represents Star or Strong Side or Sam, always remains constant. Same thing as the money, the Mike, the middle. So Nate Andrews is a really, really good sixth defensive back on the field in that role because it doesn't ask him to cover quite as much ground. However, it allows him to use his football smarts, which I believe he actually has quite a bit of, and patrol the area. We'll see how his hand-wrist injury is. I know he's still wearing that big old brace, so I wonder if something didn't happen there to re-aggravate that or if it's a different injury or just maybe it's protective. I'm not quite sure, but in the back end, I feel very confident what you have with Derwin James and Andrews and Trey Marshall, and then also potentially A.J. Westbrook, who I believe can be a quality safety for you as well. I know he's been playing some free safety behind Derwin James, as well as Calvin Bruton has. Also has learned to play the strong safety position and has also been playing some star in 7-on-7. A.J. Westbrook, a sophomore out of Daytona Beach, has put in a lot of work in the weight room. I saw a picture of him recently. He looks a bunch bigger.
Yeah, he's another guy who did some work this year.
They got him at 186, but man, I don't know about that. I think he's maybe a little bit bigger than 186. We'll have to see. But he's definitely more yoked up than he was last year. Do you want to talk? Notice we're kind of talking in these undefined terms, Anger, and I think there's good and bad to this. The good is that you have so many guys who are able to play so many varied roles. The bad, or I don't say bad, the potential bad is if you're not able to find the right amount of playing time in the right spots for each guy before the tough games get here. And with Florida State's schedule, the tough games start out with games number one against Ole Miss and game number three at Louisville. So making sure that everybody buys in and understands that most guys on this defense, assuming they get playing time, are not going to be full-time starters, right? They're going to play more specialized roles and that they're okay with that and they still get maximum effort and they don't slack off and pout in practice. That's huge. And then figuring out what those roles are going to be is the other part of this. But, man, they have so many options there on the inside and at safety. I think the next guy to talk about here is Levante Taylor.
Levante Taylor is a guy that we've really talked about as if not the person at the top of the totem pole as far as freshmen who have a chance to really gain significant minutes, significant snaps. If he's not at the top, he's not anywhere below third. And look, it's really early, but everything that you've gotten back so far has been pretty positive about him as far as initially how he's being received. And a guy who's, I believe the term you used when he first committed or when we first started to talk about him, was more or less kind of a turbocharged Greg Reed, and a guy that you don't want to put too much on a player, but if you're looking at somebody who has just kind of a different skill set as far as what he's gifted physically, then it's hard to look past Levante Taylor, and it's a guy that might kind of lead his class as far as the amount of snaps that any of the true freshmen see.
I mean, he plays like he is shot out of a cannon. Not the biggest guy, 5'10", 175, maybe 178. We'll see, whatever you want to list him at. But the acceleration, the change of direction are both elite. The top end speed, also really good. Certainly looks a hell of a lot smaller than everybody else out there. Just quick, a quick reading of Florida State's roster group in the secondary. 6'3", 6'0", 6'0", 6'0", 6'2", 6'0", 6'0", 6'1", 6'10", 6'0", 6'2", and 5'10".
Yep.
He's the only guy in the secondary under 6 foot. I mean, Florida State absolutely...
You got to be different to even get looked at to play secondary right now. By
I mean,
this,
how many guys have they took who are under 6 foot, you can remember, in the secondary for Jimbo to take them? Like, significantly under 6 foot. LaMarcus Joyner,
mm-hmm.
Levante right. Taylor. I'm probably missing one guy, but not by much, man. I mean, it's you got to be game-changing special for Florida State to use a scholarship on you in the secondary if you're not 6 foot tall. Because they play so much pattern match zone, because they emphasize the length and the ability to clog passing lanes with that length, to play physical, to jam receivers, to get in there and bat balls away. Florida State places a premium on length, and they recruit well enough to where that's not a foolish strategy. Some schools that do this are not able to get enough good recruits who can actually cover at that length. You know, some that are just like, just because you're long doesn't mean you can cover. Florida State gets guys who can do both. And yet they took Levante Taylor because Levante Taylor is so talented that his height really doesn't matter. Like, he plays bigger than his height, but the freakishness, athleticism that he has and the competitiveness that he has is something really special. Now, where is he going to play? I know for a fact he was running with the ones for more than a couple 7-on-7 and workouts this summer at the star position. He was also backing up both sides at corner, both behind the Marquez White-Carlos Becker combo and the Tavares McFadden-Marcus Lewis combo. Now, is he going to unseat either of those sides for a corner position this year? I would say no, probably not. But I think he has a real chance to play significant minutes at star, especially if they want to put Trey Marshall back there more at the safety opposite Derwin James, along with Bruton and Andrews. So that's something I'm going to be watching for. I also think that the sooner they can let him return punts, the better. He hasn't done it in the first couple days of practice that we've been able to observe. Then again, he was just an early enrollee, and this is only his, you know, what, fourth or fifth spring practice. So probably let them settle into the role of defensive back first before they put him back there. In my opinion, it's only a matter of time because he really has truly special ability as a returner.
That is another place that you think he could earn a pretty quick carve out a place for him in a quicker manner than any of the other freshmen, undoubtedly. Something that we've talked about him potentially being a punt returner from the genesis of our conversation about Taylor. But let's go ahead and take a look at Tavares McFadden, Marcus Lewis, generally the two names that are thought to be the most likely people to win the other cornerback position.
Hey, I think it's what everybody came to the podcast to listen to, right, other than the Derwin talk. Ingram, you got two phenomenally talented players here battling for that cornerback position opposite of Marquez White. On the one hand, you got a physical beast in Tavares McFadden, who they list at 6'2", 201, and who that just seems
he's
so maybe,
much. Maybe
if
he's 6'2", he's 6'2 and 5'8 or something like that.
Yeah,
that is
he looks like he's like 6'3", 210. I mean, you put him next to Derwin James, and you tell me that Derwin James has got an inch and 12 pounds on that guy. No mm-hmm. way. Nah. Now, granted, he does kind of have the tall hair, so maybe a little bit, but tremendous length. McFadden is a huge corner, just a guy who has you know very good top end speed. If you watch his kick return ability back in high school at American Heritage, it was very strong as well. A guy who I think might actually take a little bit longer to develop into an elite corner than some other players, but I think his ceiling is still very elite at the position. If Tavares McFadden's your corner this year opposite of Marquez White, you got two guys who are 6'1", 6'2". That's going to be really difficult to throw over, especially in the red zone which is where Florida State oftentimes makes its money playing very, very good red zone defense, especially against the pass. Going to be able to jam guys, going to be able to use your length against the run game, defeat blocks. That's going to be huge. And yet, Ingram, I'm not even convinced McFadden wins the job. I think Marcus Lewis has an equal shot to win this job. And Marcus Lewis at 6 foot and a half, maybe 6'1", 196, a fellow four-star. I mean, McFadden was a five-star on some sites. Lewis was pretty much a four-star across the board. Lewis is a guy that if you talk to players on this team, they will tell you it's just an absolute dog. He just has that relentless mentality. You want to talk about a guy that receivers want to fight when the summer workout's over, when it's hot, because he has gotten their head? Because no joke, this is real. He annoys the crap out of receivers, man. He's physical. He's relentless. Excellent speed. Good quickness. I think I don't know if he's quite as fast top end as McFadden is. I think his change of direction is probably better than McFadden is because he's smaller. And I think his attitude might even be a little bit more aggressive than McFadden's. In my opinion, there's no wrong choice to make here. They're both excellent prospects. I think both are going to be highly likely to start in 2017 when Marquez White goes to the league, although they'll have to battle Carlos Becker, who a couple people at Florida State have already told me they think he's an NFL guy based on like 4 or 5 days on campus. So take that what you will, the true freshman corner there who's very raw and has to develop quite a bit. But Florida State beat Ohio State out for him last year. But, man, this McFadden-Lewis battle is something that's going to be so exciting to watch. They've legitimately been rotating reps over summer. So far, I think both have lined up some with the first-team defense in camp. I don't know who's going to win. I think Lewis gives you a little bit more athleticism, perhaps, and McFadden gives you a little bit more size. It may come down to just who plays their assignments better in the defense and who busts fewer coverages. Because physically, they're both elite-level prospects.
That's a place where we absolutely agree. I personally think McFadden wins at the end of the day. Bud, what do you think of the possible scenario where McFadden is your boundary and Lewis potentially becomes your free safety?
I think that's certainly possible if they want to go with a combination to give them more coverage ability in the back end. I also think Lewis could get some time at star as well. Like, he just has that versatility there. And has enough size, I think, at 196 to play all three of those positions. No doubt. The only thing is, if he's battling full steam ahead for this job, I wonder how many reps he's going to be taking at those other spots in camp.
How much exposure he really gets. Absolutely.
If McFadden were to beat him out, right? Like, I think Lewis offers greater versatility as far as playing other positions than McFadden might at this point in his career. Some people, I think long-term McFadden might be more of like an NFL safety type, but for college, I think McFadden can play the corner spot. Mm. If McFadden were to win out, I think that's certainly a possibility that Lewis could go play star or could go play safety this year. How long would it take him to see the field doing that? You know what I mean? Because I don't know how much they're going to cross-train him when he's actually in a legitimate position battle to start at the corner opposite Marquez White.
Very true. Bud, we talked about Becker. Anything you want to say about Kyle Myers, the kid out of Louisiana?
I'm a little bit surprised he measured it at a true 6 foot. I know he's pretty athletic, and nobody at Florida State was like disappointed when they got him. I know some fans weren't totally enamored with him, but maybe he'll end up being a good player for them. I know Becker's the true name to watch, I think, as far as like next level NFL corner type of the freshman. The only other guy we didn't mention, Ingram, is Malik Jackson, the corner who Florida State took 3 years ago, and 6 foot 163, played in 8 games last year. I haven't really heard his name a whole lot, and I don't know how he's going to factor in. Maybe he'll back up Marquez White along with Carlos Becker. Maybe he'll be the number three there behind McFadden-Lewis combo. Or maybe if Lewis were to go play another position, if McFadden were to win that battle there, maybe Jackson would be the perhaps in name only backup to the eventual winner of that corner spot. This is a hard preview to do because there's so many damn options.
I feel
like every guy, we got to address 8 different possibilities. It's like a huge scatter chart.
It is confusing, and it's hard to really get an idea as to what it look like. Obviously, we have the two pieces, but even also the flexibility of Derwin James is only going to kind of muddy these waters even further. So it's great conversation to have, and it's a great look at what we think is one of the better units in college football at this position. But it's probably a better recap if we just kind of highlight the strengths of these guys, what they can do, and how many different places you might see them.
Dude, it's going
to
be so much fun.
It's a unit that gives you a lot of if you're one to want to be multiple, it's certainly a unit that gives you a lot of flexibility.
Also, Ingram, let me say this: I don't want anybody to get hurt in the secondary at all. Because I like all these kids, man. I like covering them. I root for them all to do well. Football is a collision sport. It's not a contact sport. You know, you're not just contacting somebody. You're actively colliding with them on purpose. Guys get hurt. I'm not sure there's more than, what, a very small handful of secondaries in the country who have more versatility and ability to absorb injuries if they were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Than a secondary like this. This is great depth and depth across positions. You know, you got like eight guys for five spots who could conceivably play multiple spots each. That's really impressive. And then, you got a barrel of really talented true freshmen.
It's a lot of places at this roster that you can look at it, and it's a fair reflection of the job that Fisher's done, both in evaluating talent and getting some of the more easier pieces to look at from each year. And look, you've got one player in James that we've talked about. You've got a senior in White who's going to be have an incredibly high floor. It is a lot of reasons to be optimistic, but a lot of kind of mystery as to what the final pieces look like that are the source of that optimism.
All right, man. You got anything else tonight? For DBs,
I think that's all for now.
I think this is probably the most positive preview we did. I mean, this is stupid loaded. Like, this is, these guys are ridiculously, they're so talented and so versatile. I got nothing else. We're done. Get me on the court and I'm troubled. Last week,
around and got a triple double. Freaking things every way, like Derwin James. I can't believe today was a good.
Derwin. You might want to fall back from recording. But you're right, it's not important, so I forced him to go for the hype. For being brave, they may applaud him. Psycho, I'm libo to go. Derwin James. Take your pick. Derwin. 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 Game 6.